I'm real happy to have today on Unreal Bluegrass the Wildmans, three members of the band, Eli Wildman, Isla Wildman, and Victor Furtado. How you doing, guys?
We're doing good, Steve. We're glad to be here on the phone with you.
Let's do a roll call. Eli, that was your voice. Who else is there? Just speak up so I know when someone's talking to I figure I will know who Isla is, but let's do that real quick. Everybody kind of do
it. Well, this is Isla, but I guess that one's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the last one here, Victor.
Okay, Victor, I know you. Very good. Well, let's the album, there's I have 9 cuts on it. Really diverse music that you selected. It's great that you picked Bob Dylan. You wanted to start the show off with that. You guys listen to a lot of diverse music. You have some songs I've never heard of, which is not unusual. A lot of traditional things that are not done traditionally. The very last cut is one that emanates from the band, I guess, or originates from the band, just a real upbeat instrumental falling up. But the audience is probably not going to know. I know you. I have an advantage. You didn't know it, but I saw you play at Grey Fox, and I watched a couple sets. I didn't have a chance to talk to you, but I know a little bit about your music, so let's just go a little bit through what the Wildmans are up to musically.
Musically? Well, we recorded that album last year in 2019, and that was the first year we brought Sean into the band, and Sean is on the bass. So we kind of got together at the beginning of the summer with Sean, and we pretty much we pulled a bunch of new material in, and we just started touring with it. And so the album was kind of the result of the summer's touring schedule. And we go to school in the fall.
Okay, all right. Now I remember. I know now that I think you're in the middle of transitioning, right? Are you back home now, or you just got back from school, or you're headed back to school, or what?
Yeah. Well, we've been in this. In school up until the pandemic kind of started, so we came home, and we've been out here in Virginia in the mountains just hanging out, playing music with ourselves, and that's kind of where it's going to be for a while, I think, since they're moving school online, so we don't have to go back up to Boston is where it is, Berklee College of Music.
Sure, yeah, there's a lot of great music up there. A lot of great musicians, too, are coming out with, I used to call this the Berklee effect. It's getting old now, but I think that musicians that go there, and you wind up with you probably get there because of great skill and great musical knowledge, but the players that come out, and maybe I come across the ones that focus more on bluegrass or acoustic or instruments that might lend themselves to bluegrass, I noticed this about them. You have a whole nother dictionary of musical theory, and those things kind of spill over. You have these great chops as you start out, but going to Berklee, you get introduced to all these different musical theory, and it sort of expands the horizon a little bit as to what the music is doing. Does that sound at all accurate to you? I mean, I think that's what's happening. I think it's a good thing. I'm thrilled with the music that's coming out of the Northeast.
Yeah, that's totally accurate. I mean, Berklee has a whole lot to offer in terms of just what you're talking about learning theory and improving the chops you already have and stuff like that. It's totally accurate.
And that was Isla, which we were able to pick up pretty easily. Isla, your fiddle and lead vocals. I know that Eli and Victor, who's yet to really speak up in Ernst, are musicians. Victor, you play banjo. Eli, you're on mando. Everybody else in the band will sing harmony vocals at some point or other. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Victor, I stopped by to see, and you haven't talked yet, so it's your turn. I stopped by the tent when the Wildmans were playing. I knew who the band was, and I think it was right after you had gotten some really good news, as I recall. And you're playing, I was aware of your playing before then, I just could never catch your act before, but you have an entirely different style. It's not a bluegrass style, and I don't even know that if someone really tried to corner you, I know you prefer a certain way of playing, but really, I don't know. Your music is just music to me, and I'm okay with that genre. I think that's what it should be. That's part of the reason part of the reason it's unreal bluegrass is I don't really care that someone says it is or isn't. I just like the music. But a little bit about your style.
Yeah, well, I grew up playing old-time style. I grew up going to Galax and different fiddlers conventions, and actually met Eli and Isla at Galax probably in 2013, and I was playing mostly old time tunes, and then I, you know, Eli and Isla did a little bit of classical and bluegrass, had that in their repertoire, so I started kind of branching out into bluegrass and trying other styles, and I guess, you know, I just love all kinds of music, so I've always been trying to incorporate that into the Clawhammer style, and yeah, that's pretty much my...
I think that's a pretty succinct description. For people listening in, if you listen to the Wild Ones album, which I would recommend, you're not going to hear things like the Bob Dylan cut, which is beautifully done. And I'm an old guy, so I like Bob Dylan. I remember when these things were new. But some of the instrumental parts, of which there are, I think I count maybe four, that are predominantly instrumental. Richmond, the second cut, there's a little bit of an opening vocal, then it just takes off the second cut on the album. But, for example, From the Band, Falling Up, is just a very nice tempo, expansive kind. To me, it's like... This is the expanded version of something that you might have heard in a Reader's Digest version. You won't get that reference at all. But the last cut on the album, I think, is all those musical things kind of blending in. And Eli, you might want to talk about that. I don't know.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one to go into the studio with, because that instrumental, I wrote that one and it had just been done live, and we didn't really know what was. We didn't have a real set arrangement for it, I guess, and so it was always kind of exploring different ways to play it. And so we went in the studio, and our producer Nate Leith, who we just love what he does, and he's taught us a whole lot. Nate, he turned off the lights and turned on the Christmas lights, and he said, "All right, just go for it." So.
Wait a minute. Turn on the Christmas lights. I don't know that. I know what Christmas lights are, but I don't know what they mean in a setting of, okay, let's start rolling. Turn on the Christmas lights. What does that mean?
You know, I guess so. It's I think that's a Nate Leith thing right there. But he was trying to set some ambience, you know.
Okay.
I think it's hard to just like get into that jammy, like laid back kind of vibe when you're in the studio too.
Okay. All right. That's cool. I thought it was a technical thing for the board. I didn't know. So what you're saying, when you say Nate turned on the Christmas lights, you really mean Nate turned on the Christmas lights.
I really mean Nate turned on the Christmas lights.
I like that. I like that.
It got dark and then it got colorful.
Okay. It's a great instrumental. The band The Wild Ones, by the way, I want to talk to Eli and Isla. I know Victor's a member of a musical family. I know Gina well. I know that Eli and Isla, of course, are a musical family. But Victor, you talked a little bit about meeting them. To either or both of Eli and Isla, you were very young when you met. Probably Victor, but you also were very young when you started, I guess, performing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much. Our teacher started us in a bluegrass band when Isla was probably 8 or 9 years
old. Yeah, I was
old.
7, I think.
7 years old, and so I was just about 10. And we just started playing little gigs around our hometown of Floyd, Virginia, which has just a really great little music scene here, especially in the Appalachian styles, and bluegrass and old time.
Okay, how did you have teachers? What did you listen to? Because I'm real curious, and this could be for anybody in the band. You pull from so many different sources. We're going to hear a little bit later, Sitting on Top of the World, which has been done by so many people, but you pull from so many different sources. So as to Isla and Eli, you played in Galax, you did some performances, which is amazing. But what were you listening to if you weren't necessarily listening to old-time music?
Well, pretty much since the age of, like, maybe 9 or 10, Lake Street Dive has been one of my favorite bands.
Good.
And I learned a lot of my singing stuff is just singing along with their albums and stuff like that. But then, of course, with fiddle players and stuff, you know, we were listening to, like, Nate Leith, hanging out with him. We met him around at the same time when we were that age and stuff like that, you know, the classics like Stuart Duncan and Bela Fleck and all those cats too.
Yeah. Eli, your turn.
Yeah, I mean, everything from the Punch Brothers to the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, I mean, the classics, you know, Bob Dylan and stuff, but yeah. I think Dominic Leslie is a big influence on my playing as mandolinist and his stuff that he's done with Hawktail and to name some more mandolin players, Jake Jolliffe. Yep. It's a big influence.
I know him. I still think of Dominic as a child because I think I saw him when he was very, very little. He had long hair and a lot of body action and a lot of moving. It's like Sam Bush, somebody hold my beer. I'm going to do Sam Bush better than Sam does. But you know, always a great player. So that's neat that you're exposed to him. And I know Jake. I know Jacob from music wise. I may have met him before, and I certainly know what he's capable of doing. So everything everything's real expansive. And Victor, you mentioned the music you were listening to. Lake Street Dive, by the way, phenomenal. Absolutely. And I'm trying to I think I'll come with her name. Is it Rachel?
Rachel Craig.
Oh, my God. She's just – and the band's great. But her vocals, as a vocalist, I could see easily why you would want to listen to her because it's just so much power and emotion. And, man, oh, man, well, that's a great reference.
Yeah, totally.
You guys bring some blues into the band, some blues sounds. Like I know I'm going to, at some point we can talk a little bit about Made in Harlem, which I had to track down the resource. I knew Derek Trucks right away as an author of it. I didn't know Mike Madison at all, so I had to do a little bit. How does a tune like that, which is not exactly something you're going to be exposed to in your home in Virginia, because it really is set in Harlem, but where do you pick up a tune like that?
Well, just, you know, just what we were just talking about, just listening. I was just listening to Tedeschi and Trucks, you know. Susan is such a great singer, and I just heard that song, and I was like, yeah, this would be cool to cover.
And Susan is also a Berklee Music School graduate.
Oh, so. I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the list goes on. I keep finding more and more people that have went there or spent time there, so...
That's well. I mean, I there you go. I always get to learn something from people on Unreal Bluegrass, which always makes me happy. Here's something I wanted to talk to you about. The fourth cut, kind of a longer cut, and about 6 minutes in, it switches off on a totally different tempo. But Monster Ride, Rock of Ages. I don't know if that's something you guys combined. I think it is. But tell me a little bit about how those two tunes got kind of crushed together.
Yeah, that's a pretty funny story. So I wrote that tune. I guess I was probably 15 or so when I wrote that, and I was recording an album with Nate and Tom Minty at Patuxent, and we recorded that tune. It's on this album called The Moon Trotters, this other project I did, but we recorded that, and when I came to the studio, I didn't have a name for it, and I showed it to Nate, and he just started calling it Monster Ride, and we showed it to Sean, the bass player in our band, and he said it reminded him of the Rock of Ages, which is a Gillian Welch tune.
Yeah.
Or song. And then, so it was kind of Sean's idea to put those two together and turn into one of the songs on our record.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost 7 minutes, 20 seconds. But there's a definite kick in the tempo. Is that where you're trying to? I don't know what goes through a musician's mind. Is that more dominant of one of the songs you've combined, or is that just where you just wanted to pick up the tempo about 6 minutes into it?
That's a good question. I guess just kind of feels like the spot to build some energy. And that tune, Monster Ride, it can be played like a fast old time tune, really raging, or you can slow it down and play it nice and groovy. That's where I kind of went with the Rock of Ages, I guess.
Okay.
Groovier tempo, yeah.
Yeah, I think in order to mix, like, put the two together, since they're kind of similar, you have to have a change. So we wanted to, like, have that boost in speed to kind of give it some, make the listener kind of be in tune and be able to pay attention and keep it interesting, basically.
We, I'll come back to you on this because it's the vocal and the whole arrangement of Midnight in Harlem, talk about that all you want to, but I just think it's an amazing tune with, and I kind of skipped through it to get to the fact that how did you get to it? But let's do this instead. Lost Man in Foreign Country is not a bluesy type feel, but it's certainly kind of a slower, And that song is so intriguing to me in the way you emphasize the lyrics. But tell the listeners, by the way, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to three members of the Wildmans because they have a brand new album, which is fabulous. And I have on the phone Isla and Eli Wildman and Victor Furtado. But Isla, if you could, since your vocal seemed, the way you approach the vocal on that tune, Lost Man in Foreign Country, is just breathtaking to me. So, and it has a thing that makes me chuckle every time. So for the listeners who haven't heard it, let's talk about that tune a little bit because it still makes me smile.
Okay, yeah. So we got that tune from a good, you know, good friends of ours, Nate Leith and a buddy of his and ours, Danny Nicely. And then actually the guy who wrote it, Nathan Moore, he used to live in Stanton, Virginia, and he was roommates with Nate Leith. But basically, you know, we just got that tune from them, and you know, it's kind of, I guess, more jazz. Like it has kind of a bossa nova feel.
Thank you. That's exactly. I tried to think of a way to break it away from the more bluesy type of Maiden Harmony. Yeah, bossa nova is a nice little chugging rhythm for that. I'll go for that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So yeah, in terms of vocals and stuff, I definitely approach that thinking about jazz.
Well, I've told you before we went on the air, there's a, and I've heard other versions of this too, because I wanted to get into what was behind the tune, but I love the way that there's a part. Can you explain a little bit about some of this discussion where there's someone speaking French and someone who's can understand some French, and but they don't understand everything, and it comes back to this line that just cracks me up because I keep thinking, what? Go ahead.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, each verse starts out by saying, oh, here's all these different phrases that I know how to say in French. And then it goes on to the second verse, which every second verse is filled with all these different things that, you know, you would like to say, but, oh, like, I can't speak French, so I can't tell you these things that I want to tell you. And then in the chorus, it goes on to say, like, and you could be saying these things to me, but all I could do is smile because I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah. And what's understood in that is the lyric goes, I don't know. But the feeling is I don't know what you're saying or what you're meaning, but that's not part of the verbs, of the words used.
Exactly.
And that just kind of kills me because you keep thinking the person's going to say, because I don't know. And then it ends, there's like a little bit of a hang there where it could be because I don't know what the heck you're talking about. Or I don't know know how to speak French. If I had to pick a favorite vocal off of the album, it'd probably be that one. It'll change tomorrow, but for now, that one just kind of tickles me. We talked a little bit before we went on the air. I want you to introduce, set up a little bit of Garfield's Blackberry Blossom, which is an instrumental. There's so many great instrumentals, but let's do that. Do an intro to that tune. We'll play it, and I'll come back and talk to you some more. So do that. We'll cut into Garfield's Blackberry Blossom, not to be confused with Blackberry Blossom. Tell me a little bit about that one.
All right, so this is the Wildmans you're listening to, and we're going to play an old-time tune. This is on our album. It's one called Garfield's Blackberry Blossom.
All right, let's listen to that. I'm going to come back and ask you some more questions about it. All right, to the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard the Wildmans version. They have a new album called The Wildmans on Traviana, and they did a version of Garfield's Blackberry Blossom, which is not Blackberry Blossom. But tell me a little bit why it's a different tune. But why does my mind, my old mind, now I have to deal with Garfield's as opposed to just Blackberry Blossom, which is what I learned. Not a big deal, but I mean, what's the deal?
Well. Shoot, that was just a really kind of weird sound and tune to us, and we learned it together, and I'm not sure when we started playing it as a band. It was just kind of the ones that we would jam at the festivals and stuff, the fiddlers' conventions.
I don't remember who I learned it from, to be honest.
I kind of have a memory of when it crept into the lexicon, if I can use that term. It's like, And now probably you guys are so young that it was always there aside Blackberry Blossom. So to me it's like one. You know, I remember hearing this, and I told you off the air I don't remember who played it first, and I kept thinking, oh come on man, I'm just, you know, Blackberry Blossom. Yeah, we can. But now I got to do Garfield's Blackberry Blossom. So you guys are probably too young to remember when that bright line was drawn. But it's a great version.
Yeah.
There are so many great instrumentals. That's just one of them. On the album, the Richmond, the second tune, Richmond, is, boy, just on to fire tempo. And just it shows everybody's great talent. Everybody in the band is, I don't want to get off on just the vocals or just the choices, but the musicianship, Isla, Eli and Victor, you all have extraordinary musicianship. That's kind of why I spoke a little bit about Falling Up, because if you wanted to catch one tune that made it very clear, this was a very expansive and creative and capable band of musicians, that's the one. But on Richmond, it's just buckle up and go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We like to keep that old-time tradition in there a little bit.
Do you,
I think that one really shows it.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned a set list. Do you think, is your approach, and I have to be honest, I don't remember all the songs that you played when I saw you live. Is your approach to a live set maybe similar to how you line the tunes up on this album, The Wild Ones?
Well, to tell you the truth, considering how much of that album was just came from our live set playing experience, that's pretty much it. It's what we'd been playing all summer long together, and we just kind of felt that they fit like that real nicely.
Okay. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. I think there's I'm always interested in, sometimes they tell me, well, the producer made up the lineup of the albums, and I don't get into it too much, but I feel like if the set list lends something to the list on the album, I want to know about it, because it, to me, there's some decision-making processes to what you're doing with the crowd as to whether you're doing the Dylan tune and following it with a great traditional tune, Richmond, or you're going to play Sitting on Top of the World, or how do you arrange them? So I think what you're telling me is, from your experience of playing while you could, that this pretty much emulates what an audience might see live as far as the listing. I mean, it's going to change, but I mean, as far as the tempo and the changes of the way the songs come in, I think this is what you're trying to do. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think the only exception on there is the Garfield's Blackberry Blossom. That used to be our kickoff tune. We would always start the show with that one. And it just got such a groovy, kind of spacey feel on the album. Recently, we've been saving it for later just to give it some more time to, pull on it a bit.
One tune we haven't mentioned, and we can go through each one of them, but I haven't talked about Rid of My Mind.
Rid My Mind.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's an interesting cut.
Oh, yeah, that's a special one to us, because one of our, I could speak for all of us here, one of our musical heroes, Dory Freeman, she wrote that song, and of course, Nick Falk is Dory's husband, and Nick Falk is playing drums on those songs.
Okay.
So Nick said, hey, Dory's got this song, and she'd love if y'all want to record it. And, I mean, as soon as he said that, we were all like, wow, that'd be super special to us. So she taught it to us, and she ended up playing guitar and singing on it too.
Now there, you've mentioned Dory Freeman. You've mentioned Nick, who's listed on the album, but I don't know Dory Freeman, and perhaps I should, but tell me a little bit about how you know her, and she must be a songwriter, performer. I know nothing about her, so you can help me.
She's a great musician to know. She's really coming up, and she's got 3 albums out now, I think, all original stuff. But her husband, Nick, we met Nick back when he was playing with Nate Leith, and we were really little. It was even before meeting Victor, back when I was probably 10 or 11 and Isla 7 or 8. And so we've known Nick kind of growing up, and Nick is another Berklee graduate. So introduced us to his wife, Dory, when he moved to Galax with her. And she's from Galax, Dory.
Okay. Again, yeah, I'm making notes as to who to look up. I try to learn as much as I can.
Yeah.
So now I can look up that name and figure out what the heck's backtrack back on that a little bit. It's a great song.
It's a great one to know.
That's a great song.
Steve, you asked earlier what we had been up to musically the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been playing a lot with Dory Freeman and Nick Falk, and we'll definitely be teaming up for the next album we have.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay. That's good to know. And then I can look for that to arrive, and then I will by then know something about them, maybe independent of that. So that's good to know.
Yeah.
Victor, my name causes concern sometimes, and I have to tell you this because of because of Smoke Signals, the movie. Do you ever get any of the "Hey Victor" thing out of the blue? Does anyone? Am I just totally lost here?
I'm not sure.
Okay, all right. All right. When we're done here, find the movie Smoke Signals. It's pretty. It's bizarre. It's an independent film, and it's about some members of an Indian tribe. And one, this is way too much information. One of the members of the young boy's name is Victor, and his friend is kind of a nerdy guy, and he's always saying, "Hey, Victor," like constantly. That's every sentence starts with "Hey, Victor." So, next time I see you, I'll try to say "Hey, Victor." But when you're done here, if you got a minute, go find Smoke Signals. It's got a lot of neat stuff. It's not just a comedy, but it's kind of neat about the different look at the Indians, how they were treated and the response in a modern day film, but there's got some comical moments. So there, I lost you for no reason, except now you can look it up. I want you to introduce, fantastic version of Sitting on Top of the World off the air. You know, it's been recorded in so many different types of music. And this version is just a killer version. Talk a little bit about Sitting on Top of the World. That'll be the last tune that we play when we get to it. We're not there yet, but Sitting on Top of the World, I think, is going to be our last tune that we'll hear as we say goodbye to the Wildmans. Thanks so much for being here, but we're not ready to say goodbye yet. But talk about Sitting on Top of the World, and I'll drop that one in.
All right. So, yeah, this tune, Sitting on Top of the World, it's a classic. It's been in the roots music tradition for, I think, it's just about as long as there's been one.
And, forever.
We were just looking for new songs to play, and our friend Nate Leese, who's the co-producer on the album, Nate helped us arrange that song one day with this really groovy line that Victor plays on the banjo just to kick it off.
Right,
plays it throughout the whole
thing. I was going to say there's like four notes and they're just there all the time. And I keep thinking, is it been recorded and relooped? Or are you doing it every time? And if he misses one, do you have to go back and start over?
I was doing it every time.
Were you? Okay. I actually was going to ask that question because I thought, man, that's a long time to keep doing that. It might have changed the key one time, but I mean, it's a long time to be hitting those four notes that steady. So,
yeah, I mean, we did the whole album pretty much live.
Oh, good.
Yeah, especially that song, though, it's just really in touch with the blues roots of it.
Yeah, he told us to try to feel like we're in a swamp.
It's a swampy sound. It's a great, isn't that a great tune, though? I mean, how many tunes, and you guys are still pretty young, and I don't care what your age is, you're younger than me, but so many songs are going to come to you from different sources still. I mean, you're just beginning to hear those things, and people are going to refer tunes to you, but isn't it great to find those songs and then reinterpret them and hear. You probably have no concept now how many times that's been recorded and how many different ways, and yours is your own way. But there's so many great tunes that are going to come to you because your outlook on music, you have the ability to take it all in, but your outlook on music is more inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you guys are going to have fun exploring all this stuff. So this album then, which I have my hands on, we're talking about the Wildmans on, is this the first album that you put out as the Wildmans?
This is our first self-titled album.
Okay.
With this arrangement.
Okay.
We have some little kid albums that they're out there. You can find them if you look hard enough.
Okay. Hey, tell me about Virginia Folk Life Program, which is listed as a sponsor on the album. They put a little note inside the liner notes, and I don't know about them either.
Oh, they're so great. They're actually a big reason of us getting to know Nate Leith and Danny Nicely, and even Nick Falk a little bit. John Lohman, who was the folklore for the Virginia Folk Life Program, he ran a stage up at the festival Floyd Fest. And when me and my sister, we were, I mean, probably 10 and 7, and he just saw us playing, and he said, "Hey, you guys want to come up here and play with these cats like Nick Falk and Nate Leith, who had already probably graduated Berklee College?" And, I mean, to us, that was just so incredible. I mean, that was really us getting introduced to them at such a young age, was through the Virginia Folk Life Program and John Lohman. And since then, they've kind of, you know, we've been able to work with them and keep stuff moving. And they've been such a help to our musical
education.
That's great. I'm glad that you filled me in on this entire album. We've talked about all the people that are in the band. We're missing one today on the bass, but on this entire album, there's not a guitar player.
There's
a little tiny bit, but not a lot. Not a lot.
A little bit in there, but not a lot. And that's kind of, I mean, we've been kind of figuring out how to make that work for a while, and I've just played the mandolin, and I've been, I don't know, I was having fun with it, so I put an octave pedal on it and some other stuff, some other effects you hear in there.
Yeah.
And we kind of electrified it. Victor got an electric banjo.
Saw that. So, Victor, what kind of electric banjo is the one on the album cover? I don't know what you play all the time, but what is that one?
That's a Neckville.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the one cutting the tracks.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's kind of unusual, but I mean, it's not like you miss like a heavy guitar sound. You don't. I mean, you fill in there, you know, it's as much as what you play as what you don't play. That's a cliche line that I learned to sound smart, but I mean, honestly, you don't necessarily say where's the guitar until you actually look at it and realize it, but it's not, you know, you don't need a guitar.
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah,
great.
I mean, it works for that one really well, and we like how it sounds, but you know, we might be incorporating some more, different instruments in as we go along with recording this next album. We're gonna have some time to experiment with it, but that was what we figured out for that summer of live shows, and it was just working pretty well.
Great.
So
it's great sound. I look forward to nothing but new things. You're gonna be are you working on a new album now? Did you mention that, or did I just imagine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the three of us we live together out here in Floyd, so we can kind of play together.
Okay.
And work on stuff as we go about day to day. And the studio is actually just in Floyd too, so it's down the road from us, Traviana. So we get to, you know, we're gonna be home this fall as school is online. So that's gonna give us some time to get over to the studio and start working on this next project we're gonna put out with them.
When did you guys find out that you were going to have online classes?
Just before we signed our lease.
Okay.
So it was perfect timing.
Okay.
But it was just about a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
They announced all that stuff. It's been a big process, I'm sure you know.
Oh, geez.
As everything has.
Yep. Everything ended.
Yeah, and we're all here together in Floyd, so it's working out well.
Good. Listen, this has been a real joy. I'm so glad that you guys were available. The Wildmans on the phone. We had Isla Wildman. Hello, Isla. Eli Wildman. Hello and thanks. Victor Furtado. Hello and thanks for the audience. And Sean Newman. We didn't have the bass player, but we had three-fourths of the Wildmans, and we're talking about the new album, Wildmans on Traviano. I think we've covered everything. Let's then let you guys go, and for the audience, we'll play your stunning version of Sitting on Top of the World, which I think is going to be a benchmark for the next group that says, how do we want to retreat this song?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Yeah. I'll catch you somewhere. Whenever venues open up and music is live, I'll find you.
Yeah.
I'll look for you specifically and say hello.
We're looking forward to it, Steve. Thanks so much.
All right. See you later.
Take care.